May I have your attention, please? The following is not the real Jeff Foxworthy.
If you have ever referred to a presidential election as a supersedure, you might be a beekeeper. If you do more splits than a gymnast, you might be a beekeeper. If you wash your bee suit once a year, whether it needs it or not, you definitely might be a beekeeper. And whoo,
stay the heck away from me.
Whew, that was like Grandma's bloomer.
Welcome to Bee Love Beekeeping, presented by our good friends at Man Lake. Today, our guest is John Smith from Oklahoma, and we'll be discussing his experience in both commercial and hobby beekeeping, how he got started, and his beekeeping in many different parts of the country. But before we jump into that, a listener recently sent in his wild and crazy beekeeping story that really cracked me up. Some of us can maybe relate to this. He's a little too shy to come on the podcast, so please bear with me as I read it. It's pretty long, but here we go. Okay, just to give you a little bit of background here, we're going to find so many mistakes going on in this story. The first of one being he and his wife live next door to their in-laws. Okay, so here's what's going on. The in-laws got into beekeeping. He's been into beekeeping much longer than them. He knows a lot more about it than they do. They have lost hives over winter, and there's only one hive left between the two of them. The in-laws think they know it all. They think he knows nothing. All right, there's your setup. Mother's Day weekend, he was thinking, I have got to get into my hive. I've got to see what's going on there, check on it. But he just hadn't got around to it yet. And at the dinner table with the in-laws, mother-in-law says, oh, why don't we check on the bees tonight? He thought, that sounds really strange. You shouldn't go into a beehive at night. That never happens. And nobody talks about it again for a while. So later on in the evening, he puts the kids to bed. And then at 9 o'clock, he gets a call saying, hey, we're going to check your hive. Come on over. Oh, he's thinking, this is a big mistake. But he grabs his veil, he grabs his big gloves, and he runs over. He doesn't take time to get his smoker or his full bee suit. Now in his words, yep, they're in my hive. Father-in-law with a veil, mother-in-law has nothing on for protective clothing, but of course she wasn't going to be handling the frames. I look around for their supplies. No smoker anywhere. I think to myself, this is going to be fun. The feeder is still on and they're taking it off to get to the frames. They get one frame out and check it. The comb is building out away from the foundation in a way that they don't like. I say something about it, but they ignore me and then comment how their bees hadn't done that because they used wax foundation. They put it back in without fixing the comb. I just let them keep walking into their disaster. They pull another frame closer to the center. It looks good, has some brood. My mother-in-law is all high and mighty. I don't like how little brood there is. That's not good. So this is just the first of five frames that had come with the nuke, so it's fine. They pull another one from the outside, but on the other side to see the build out. And I'm all thinking, good, they're going to rush this because they can tell the bees are getting agitated. I've now got bees checking me out, starting to get mad, and I'm off to the side. They put the frame back in. My mother-in-law wants to check for brood in the middle. I think, uh-oh, this is going to be the last straw for the bees. They pull up the frame. My mother-in-law gets in there, no veil. Pointing her flashlight to see them, she says, the brood looks good now, but I can see the bees start to swarm angrily, and they're starting to land on her. Suddenly, she is backing away from the hive. My father-in-law, who I think can tell something is wrong with the hive's behavior, now is yelling that he can't see to pull the frame as she left him with no light. I'm told angrily by my father-in-law, you need to get in there. you have a veil and gloves. Now, this is only because I was semi-prepared. I grab the flashlight from her, step in, hold the light, knowing full well what they've done and that I'm going to get stung. I watch in horror as my father-in-law insists on pulling another frame to check for brood and pollen. I can see him starting to get stung in earnest now. No smoke to mask the smell pheromones, telling the other bees to attack. I know this is only going to escalate. I've got them landing on me, trying to find flesh to sting. I have a good 2-inch gap between my gloves and my short sleeves, so keeping the light steady for him is not my priority as I try to keep from getting that first sting, which I know will compound quickly without smoke. He puts the frame back in while yelling about light. I finally just tell him to close the hive. He puts the top feeder back on. I start casting my eyes about looking frantically for whoever has the syrup to refill it. My brother-in-law, who I didn't know was there, has run off with it. Wanting to not make this a complete waste, I chase him down, then risk going back in to refill the feeder, which really was all I originally thought we were going to do. But alas, that doesn't help when they're already out of the hive trying to sting us. I fill the feeder about 2/3 full, as I can tell the bees are in full attack mode now. I can see my father-in-law has a half dozen stings already, but puts the lid fully on while smacking at his exposed skin and screaming about how the bees have gotten inside his veil. Turning to run, I realize a bee is under my veil also. I can feel it climbing on my nose. While I'm booking it away from the hive, I swipe away the bee and feel the veil catch and roll the bee. The buzz has stopped. I got her, I think triumphantly, knowing that they're going to follow more intently if I get that first sting. Thinking that the idiots and onlookers would realize that they need to vacate the area also, I don't say anything too assertive for them to leave the area as I approach. The bee is back. I hadn't killed it after all. I smack my nose, knocking my glasses and veil off, but it heroically stings me right next to my nose and way too close to my eye. My mother-in-law is now screaming about one in her hair, but she and the onlookers have stopped some 15 feet from the hive to check each other for bees. I tell my wife to get farther away and to follow me. She's now decided it's a good time to tell me that I need to make sure I got all the bees off of me before going back into the house. My in-laws' house is up the hill in the other direction, so I assume that they've listened and left. At 40 feet, I'm still feeling 2 or 3 bees on me. I feel another one land, and it instantly stings me on the jawline. I arrive back at my deck, which has a good light on, and check myself for bees. Suddenly, my 3-year-old, having heard that we were checking the bees, comes out of the back door, having changed out of his jammies and into shorts and a t-shirt. He announces triumphantly he has come to help with the bees. He had received explicit instructions to stay in bed as the bees would likely get really mad. I send him tersely back into the house, knowing I more than likely have some on me. He's now crying because he wants to help and I won't let him. Getting him through the door, I return to inspect myself. He now has his nose pressed to the glass, sobbing, so I ask my wife to comfort him as I kill another bee before I get stung by it. Disposing of yet another bee, I cast about myself looking for her, but she is nowhere to be found. Yep, she's still back with the others, standing 15 feet from the hive and swatting themselves. Convinced I'm now bee-free, I go inside the house to console my son and get him to start walking back to bed. When my wife comes in 5 minutes later, I rhetorically ask, "Where did you go?" Dumbfounded, she replies, "We were all checking each other for bees." I had gotten stung farther away from the hive than where they had been standing. My father-in-law got at least a dozen stings. I'm sure most of those after we had closed the hive. A few got his face, too. All right, final chapter here. Later that night, they called and told us how they now believe in smoke, and they were going to double check on their impression that night was maybe not the best time to check the hive. Also mentioning to my wife that they were looking to buy at least one full bee suit now. Okay, lots of lessons learned. Now, what do you say we get to our guest? I'd like to welcome to the show today, John Smith, and that is your real name, isn't it, John?
Yes, it is. Thank God it's not John Doe.
And you're in Oklahoma. And so, hey, welcome to the Midwest, everybody.
Yep, Oklahoma, south of Oklahoma City.
Do you have kind of crazy winters there as far as beekeeping?
Overall, it doesn't really get all that cold, mid-teens. And, you know, we might get lows down to just below zero, but very rarely is that the case. Unfortunately, we get ice. So overall, the winters aren't terrible, but you got to deal with the ice. So,
yeah, they do sound pretty rough. Hey, when you and I were talking earlier, I found it interesting that you had done beekeeping in a number of different locations, including Texas, Arizona, Florida, Wisconsin, Minnesota, now Oklahoma. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, you worked for a commercial beekeeper for a time?
Yeah, so I worked for a commercial beekeeper about 2 years after I started beekeeping in 2010. And I worked for a person who he had approximately 10,000 hives, and I got to learn the kind of the pollination routes and kind of commercial style of beekeeping.
Well, the first thing that I want to learn from you, and we're going to talk about all kinds of topics today, by the way, including wild and crazy beekeeping stories. That's where you and I first met. But I'd like to hear what it's like when you're working for a commercial beekeeper. What is a year like? Like, what are you doing in September? What are you doing in November? What are you doing in March, April, May, that kind of thing? Would you just sort of take us through the calendar?
Yeah, so typically honey harvest is in August, and August, early September. Mite treatments go in right after the honey harvest. So that's kind of where we decide, are these guys queenless? Are, you know, are they small? Did they swarm? That type of stuff. So around that period of time, August, September, that's kind of where, I don't know if you've ever listened to Bob Binney, but he says your season starts in August. And that's kind of one of the things I learned. So getting the mites under control, testing, so on and so forth. By around, this is for Wisconsin, Minnesota. So by around middle of November, they will get loaded onto a trailer and hauled down south, whether it be Florida or Texas was typically where I went. And then you more or less start feeding the heck out of them by middle of December and testing for mites, keeping everything like that under control. And then we would load them up end of January, beginning of February, and then they would go over to California. Those are the only, I've only pollinated almonds and in California. And beginning of March-ish, somewhere in that area, sometimes it's a little later, they would get loaded back up and hauled back to Texas or Florida, where we would go on ahead and we'd start splitting and making nukes up. And then from there, they would either go on to different pollination contracts or they would go back to Wisconsin, Minnesota, back home. And then you basically, you know, get them up there in April, May-ish, and take them out to your out yards, make sure they're good on mites and whatnot. If you need to retreat, typically we used Apivar in the fall more commonly, and we used Formic in the spring because it gave you a little better knockdown. But usually if you keep the mites low all year, you don't really run into too much trouble. Then you just repeat, you harvest or put boxes out throughout June, July, and pull them in August, September. It's a full-time job.
Yeah. Beekeepers are the hardest working people, especially the commercial beekeepers. I don't envy that. I wanted to stress one of the first things that you said, and that was making sure that the mites were under control starting early, like in August, something like that. And I know a lot of beekeepers have made the mistake that I have too, going, oh, I'll check before winter because I don't want mites in winter. And so come October, yep, got mites. Let's put some treatment on now. And folks, you got to start a lot earlier than that. Keep them under control. In fact, all year long, keep them under control.
Yeah. And one thing I will say, that was my biggest, that was the best thing I learned from going from just a hobbyist to a sideliner, is working with a commercial outfit, to where they were very critical upon, you know, keeping the mite numbers low. You know, if we had 2% mite counts, that was way too high, basically. So they were very critical on that. And it was always taken into account that, you know, if you've got sick bees, they're never going to be very productive. So, and that's what I've seen too.
And then at what point did you decide, hey, instead of working for this great company, I think I want to do some of this on my own and become a sideliner? And how many hives did you get up to?
2010, I started with two hives, and 2011, spring of 2011, I had lost both of them. I would say failure to treat and failure to feed.
Quick break to thank our presenting sponsor, Man Lake. I've found that Man Lake has absolutely everything I need to take care of the health of my bees. Mite checks and treatments, beetle management, hive health and nutrition, pollen substitutes, food and feeders, and the knowledge base to help you know how to use it, including Bella, their AI beekeeping genius. Just look for her icon in the bottom right-hand corner of your screen at manlakeltd.com. While you're there, don't forget your discount code MLBLOVE10. It's in the show notes for $10 off your first $100 purchase.
Then 2011, I think I bought five packages, and I was started working with the commercial operation a little bit, you know, just helping in the spring split and stuff like that, because I was wanted to learn a lot. And by 2013, I believe I had around 50 colonies that I had. 2014, and by this point I had very good results. I was coming out of winter with a 10% loss, you know, a 10% loss rate. So I had very good results.
Nice.
And I went from around 50 up to 200, 250, somewhere in that range. And then I started working with the commercial beekeeper more, and we were basically just including my yards into his rounds. And he got me into pollination around the 2013-ish, 2014 mark. And that's kind of where I did that for another 5 years.
You jumped in pretty fast. You recommend that for other people?
If you have a good mentor, I don't think it's a problem. If you're just going in it alone, I would suggest against it, because I got a lot of breaks in regards to somebody who, you know, who they would buy a truckload of equipment so I could get commercial prices on all of my equipment. And I also had knowledge. If I wanted to ask a question, or I was pondering an idea, I could just shoot a text, or, you know, give my mentor a call, and he would be more than happy to help me in any way, shape, or form. And that's the same way with, like, queens and whatnot too. I raised them as well, and I did supply myself and some of his queens as well. So we all kind of work together.
Let's talk about queens. As long as you brought up queens, let's talk about that a little bit. I know you have some experience raising queens. What kind of method do you like to use? Tell me a little bit about your preferences and also the kind of breeds you like.
So I mostly did Carniolans and Italians. They were mutts by the time, you know, I got done with it, or I, you know, they made it and whatnot. But Carniolans and Italians were the most popular. And I would basically start grafting in the middle of May. I used starter finishers. I did not move the cells from a starter to a finisher. I made all my mating nukes and stuff like that. You know, I did all that stuff. What I would do is I would take an actual 5-frame nuke and run a little piece of 1/2-inch plywood, dado that out. And then I had my nukes that when I was done with them, I could just pull that out and it was a nuke again. I only run approximately 150 to like 250 queens a year, but that was to satisfy myself and my local beekeeping clubs. Realistically, what it takes, this was a learning experience, strong hives. You want to, for your starters and your finishers, they need to be strong. I would usually do it in 10 frame boxes, and I would be swapping out frames of brood. Capped brood would have 8 or 9 frames of capped brood in a hive at all times. There were too many bees in the box, basically, is how it played out. I could easily start and finish 50 cells in that colony every about 2 weeks-ish. You know, I think a queen emerges on day 16. So I would swap them out about every 12 to 13 days.
Okay. Wow. You're cooking through this stuff, John. What else do you think would be important for people to learn about from your experience?
Grow with your bees would probably be my biggest suggestion. I know when I first got started, I had a mentality of like, I wanted to be a commercial beekeeper and have 1,000 colonies or that type of stuff. It's not really worth it to do that. In my opinion, I grew very fast. You know, I went from 10 to 50 in a year, and that's a big jump. But if you grow with your bees, and you know, you double every year, it doesn't take you very long to get to 250 or 300. So that's what I would suggest, is growing with your bees. And if you can, go work with a commercial beekeeper for a year or two if you're interested in that type of stuff, because they are such a plethora of knowledge that you really can't get unless you're working with them. You know, you can read books and watch videos, but it's different than hands-on, being out there, seeing the sights and, you know, that type of stuff.
Did you find that some of the things that you learned just came with experience? I'm thinking, for example, if you've got a hobbyist, a fairly new beekeeper, and they're in their hives for, maybe they've got 2 hives, and so they're in there for an hour a month or something like that. I mean, they're going to have a hard time finding a queen. They're going to have a hard time spotting problems, things like that. What kinds of things can you learn by being in hives all day, every day?
Well, one thing you can learn, in my opinion, which is very important as well, is you don't need to see the queen. Like, I know that's a big thing with new people, because I've taught quite a few people, family members included, about they want to get into bees. And that's great. I always suggest that they do it. But when they say, oh, you know, I don't see the queen, or I can't find her. And I said, well, do you see eggs and larvae? Are they making the queenless roar? And usually if they say, well, no, I see eggs and I see larvae and stuff, I'm like, well, she's in there. Just, you don't need to see her. You know, she's doing her job and you just let her be, because too many people will go through and manipulate frames and unintentionally cause harm when it's really unnecessary. And that was one thing I learned. I personally don't rip into a hive any farther than if I see a few eggs, that's fine. That's all the more I need to see. Yeah, I would suggest don't be in the hives too much, and look at the signs around the hive to see if they're looking for queens and whatnot.
I've heard the term over-inspecting. There's under-inspecting and over-inspecting. We need some kind of a nice balance right in the middle.
Yeah, the over-inspecting is just as bad, if not worse, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because then you get bees that are mad at you, and then you get, you know, stung, and a bad experience, leaves a bad taste.
Well, you're ripping their house apart. You're probably smoking them to death. It's going to put them back every time you get in there. So you need to have a good reason and a plan every time you get in.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Hey, I'm just curious, if you don't mind, why did you decide not to be a commercial beekeeper?
Why did I consider not to be? That's a question I've asked myself too. Realistically, I didn't like the management aspect of it more than anything. That was the worst part. I really liked being in the bee yard and working with the bees. I didn't like the, you know, having to set up locations and having to buy stuff and having to pay your employees and stuff like that. And that's the main reason why. Overall, I'm more of the, you know, the type of person who would much rather be in the bee yard, you know, working with the bees than sitting behind a desk and on a telephone, talking to clients and talking to customers and stuff like that.
All right. The first time you and I talked, you were telling me about an experience that you had with some very hot queens. Okay. Let's put that in perspective. We're talking about beekeeping here when we're talking about hot queens. Tell me what was going on. This was one of those wild and crazy stories.
Okay. Well, so it was middle of March-ish, and I got a telephone call from my mentor. And mind you, I'm 1,000 miles away. And he says, hey, I'm going to need your help. And I was like, oh, okay, well, you know, what do we need? He's like, can you be down to Houston by tomorrow? And I'm like, yeah, I can. So I got on a plane and I flew down there, and I figured out that we were talking back and forth, and he had approximately 700 splits that were way too aggressive. They were bad. You couldn't be in the bee yard without getting just mauled to death. So I was talking to him, and I had never worked with really hot bees before. And he, you know, we were sitting in the truck. I remember that morning we were sitting in the truck, and he's like, well, just make sure you're zipped up. And we pulled into the off the field road, and they were already starting to hit the truck. And this is, you know, it's 6:30 in the morning. Sun's just starting to come up. We had a heck of a day, because the first day we went through and we had to fix these hives. So it was us and five other people, I think, four other people. Basically, we took the colonies for double deeps and just split them like right in half. One side went to a new pallet, and then put lids on all the other colonies that we took the top box off of. And then that next morning, we went back through, and I wasn't checking the hives for queen to see which ones were queen ripe, but basically they would just pop the lid, and you could hear if they're queenless, and then that lid would get turned over if it was queenless. And if the other one was not, it got left alone. And then we had another person coming behind them, putting new queen cages into the boxes that were queenless. We left them alone for a day. And then the next day, we went and shook out all of the boxes that were queen right. And that was a new experience for me, and I don't wish to ever relive that.
When you say you shook them out into something on the ground, what did you do?
On the ground, yep.
Oh, man.
The queen right colonies basically got shook out onto the ground, and those boxes got combined back with the colony that had a new queen in it. And yeah, it was blotting out the sun. Like, you had to wipe your veil off. It was really bad. I've never seen that before, but that was, I guess, one of the most efficient ways to do it, because you can't go through 700 colonies and try and find each individual queen. But yeah, that was one really crazy beekeeping story that I've had, and I wish that upon nobody.
I think you just answered my earlier question about why did you decide not to be a commercial beekeeper?
I learned a really good lesson that day, and it was, if you're going to be doing something like that, you've got to be able to take a curveball. And that was a heck of a curveball, because it was terrible. That's the nicest way to put it. It was, I don't know how many times I got stung, you know, you get stung in the gloves, and I had a good suit on and everything like that, but that's just how they did it. We taped up our legs. I remember that was one thing I did. I didn't do right away, because, you know, you're wearing your boots and whatnot, but
yeah,
they can still figure out ways to get in. These were strong colonies too, because they had come back from almonds about a month earlier. They were fairly strong. So you got to deal with that too. And I don't know if you know anything about bees, where the bigger they get, the more pushy they can get. But that's kind of what I've noticed.
Well, when you told me they were in Houston, I assumed maybe they had Africanized genetics, and that's why they were so ornery. But if they had been out in almonds with you, did they have that kind of personality then?
No, these were splits. These were new queens that they had introduced into splits. The old hives were not like that. These were the splits that were coming back. But we usually made splits pretty strong, because if you make them strong, you can get a secondary nuke off of them, instead of, because we sold nukes in May 15th ish. So if you make them strong, if you put, you know, 4 or 5 frames of brood plus a queen cell, within a month, you can make another nuke off of them.
Gotcha. Okay, so folks, if you want to have a real experience, find 700 really angry beehives, pull them in half, shake them out all over the ground. I can't even imagine. When you say blacked out the sun, I believe you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because these are all healthy bees, and they're all wanting to kill anything that moves. So it was bad. And to be honest with you, I don't know where the queens came from. I wasn't going to, you know, push any buttons on anybody. But yeah, they were hostile, to say the least.
Sounds like they came from hell, personally.
Yeah, you're in Utah, correct?
Yeah.
So where do you guys get your queens and packages and stuff from?
Well, you can get some local ones here. A lot of people get them from California. So people that have been in almonds and either kept their bees out there and then shook them into packages or made nukes out there and bring them here. They usually come here in April sometime, is pretty average. So yeah, both from out of state and from here. And I prefer ones from here because they've been proven to be able to overwinter here and deal with our climate.
Yeah.
It's like I've always thought, oh, I've got to get some of those Kona queens because, you know, I love Hawaii. Let's get some of that Hawaii genetics here. But I don't know, can they handle a winter in Utah in the mountains? I mean, I'm at 5,700 feet where I live and have colonies here, and they've got to be pretty tough bees.
Yeah, and that's one thing I have learned is because I used to use a lot of Florida queens, and that was always my concern was, well, I was back on the Minnesota-Wisconsin border, and I wondered if they would be able to winter as well. And I actually found it wasn't all that big of a deal. As long as they had enough food, they're pretty resilient.
And I know I'm way oversimplifying because in Kona, it's not like they have Kona genetics, right? I mean, honeybees aren't native there either. So frankly, they could take Carniolans or Russians or anything over there and raise them there. And they do it there because the weather's so great all year round. I get that. I'm just sort of oversimplifying that genetic thing. Hey, before I let you go, you've done enough beekeeping. I'll bet you have a wild and crazy story that's going to make us laugh. Can you think of one?
My first real experience with working with a commercial beekeeper, I was more or less the labor. This would have been in 2011. I was pulling honey, and I had no idea of what was going on. You know, I was just basically doing what I was told. And that's fine, but I had a suit. I didn't have a suit, so my mentor gave me a suit, which was a single layer, like almost like a overall type of suit. You know, it's a single layer, and I was trying to count the stingers in my back by the end of the day, but I ran out at 350.
In your back or in the back of your suit?
It was in the back of my suit, but the stingers still go through.
Okay.
Because you're sweating and the suit sticks to you.
Oh, man.
So then he jokingly says, oh, you know, you should probably buy a ventilated suit so you don't get stung. And I'm like, well, I guess you could have just told me that, but I probably would have been too broke to buy one. So I'm using the money I made today to put an order in for a ventilated suit.
So were these bad enough? I mean, were these regular stings? Like you got all the venom and everything through the suit?
No, they weren't like I was getting dosed 100% of the venom. They were just stuck in the suit. And when the suit would lay down on top of your back, it would like stick to you because it's 100 degrees out, you know, and
yeah,
I'm sweating, picking up, you know, 60-pound boxes and throwing them up on the back of the truck.
Yeah, well, that's what I had assumed. But if you had actually taken that many stings your first day,
oh,
I wanted to ask you how you survived it, how you felt that night.
Yeah, no, I was actually very sore, but I wasn't getting the full venom. They were stinging the suit, and I'd pull it out. You know, I'd feel it.
Yeah,
but yeah, you don't get immune to the response of, you know, something stinging you. So.
No, you may get immune to the venom, but not to the pain of the sting. You're still getting stabbed with a needle.
That was my first kind of, I laugh about it because, well, I mean, we can all relate to being stung a few times, but when you get stung repeatedly over and over, and then you have the pheromone on you. So every time you walk into the bee yard and pull a box off, you get to experience it again.
That is just one of those terrible welcome to beekeeping, John.
Yeah, I definitely learned my lesson though. It only took one time, and I went and got a ventilated bee suit that next day. So then I didn't hardly get stung at all.
All right. Hey, John, I really appreciate you being with me today. Any last thoughts? Any wisdom that you'd like to leave with our listeners?
I would like to suggest that people get into beekeeping. It's a wonderful hobby that you can learn something new from every day. You'll never learn everything about bees. So I would suggest everybody take a peek at it and get into it.
Amen. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again for joining us here on Bee Love Beekeeping, presented by Man Lake. Remember right now to follow or subscribe and share this podcast. Also, a quick shout out to Vita Bee Health for their support. Vita's Varroa Control range of products includes Apistan, Apigard, and now Varroxan, extended release oxalic acid strips. Thanks, guys. Enjoy spring, everybody. Enjoy your bees. And remember, if you're not just in it for the honey or the money, you're in it for the love. See you next week.